collaborations and creative projects. It's pretty special, I think.
Right. Yeah.
Well, DJ AL, Aaron Ladley there at the Eclipse Show at KGNU in Boulder, Colorado.
Hi, this is Karen Schomer, formerly of The Schomer Show. You're listening to WGXC ACRA 90.7 FM.
You can go there with your family, and you can meet new friends in the library. When you're at the library, you can read lots of books, and you can find any book. There are lots of Dog Man books, which are my favorite books of all. When I go to the library, I read them, and that's why I like the library.
I'm also on a radio show at the library, and there was also a video making workshop that I did, and I did some animation, and I made a lot of new friends, and I laughed a lot, and it was really fun. My main reason of coming here is because it's books. Of course, it's a library, and I really like the wide selection of books, and they have computers and all sorts of stuff. They also recently did a mural painting thing where they painted the computer room in the back, and I got to be a part of that, and it was really fun. It looks really cool now, and I just really appreciate the library for being here, and if I had to choose between this library and any other one to go to, I would choose this one. I really like the Hudson Area Library, and I hope that it stays running for as long as I live or maybe even longer, because I know a bunch of people that love to read.
You are invited to join me upon the Cypress Bough. Music from North Africa, West and Central Asia. First Monday of every month, 8 to 10 p.m. on WGXC 90.7 FM and WGXC.org.
WGXC underwriting support is provided in part by SunCommon, supporting vibrant communities across New York for 15 years, offering custom solar installations for homes, farms, and businesses. Information at suncommon.com.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Amy Rigby of Catskill, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
You are tuned to 90.7 FM, WGXC. Like good old tap water. Just turn it on and get it.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC News Update. Nancy Kern reports for Columbia Green Media that the Town of Catskill Planning Board holds a public hearing about a proposed subdivision with 25 housing units on 140 acres at 6:30 p.m. on October 10th at the Catskill Town Hall. Town Planning Board Chair Teresa Golden said she doesn't know if developer Vita Forest wants to market the subdivision dwellings as investment properties to be utilized as short-term rentals. Golden said, and I quote, "From a planning board perspective, that's something we don't focus on. We only see if the development complies with requirements from a planning board perspective. That's a beautiful piece of property. It's got a gorgeous waterfall. One of our major concerns is to ensure that the wetlands are protected and the land is being used appropriately so as not to impact the flora and fauna, end quote. So far, the planning board is blocking developers from using herbicides on the property. Now the board is waiting for public input on the subdivision with an entrance from Bogart Road and a second egress on Penny Lane. Golden said, and I quote, "We never know if there will be controversy at the public hearing. The beauty of the public hearing is we hear from the neighbors who live in the neighborhood. I welcome input from neighbors," end quote. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com. Nancy Kern reports for Columbia Green Media that at a meeting on August 21st, the Athens Town Board agreed to pay a local engineer to begin a study on how to modernize the Athens Community Center. The building was put up in 1901 and currently houses the municipal offices of the town and village of Athens. Previously, there has been an elementary school and Columbia Green Community College classes in the building. The spending passed 3-1 with Councilperson Anthony Plough as the dissenting vote. The town and the village will split the $50,000 bill. Athens Town Supervisor Michael Perrone said, and I quote, "We want to start updating things, get more modern in handling the books and records and archives and so forth. The mayor and the deputy mayor suggested we join together in this study to determine how the building can best serve us either in modernization, expansion, renovation, whatever the study is going to show, that's where we're going to go," end quote. Councilperson Michael Regani wants to create a meeting space. He said, and I quote, "We're meeting at an office. There's nowhere to make a decent-sized meeting room. Each floor is one-third hallway. The building is solid, but it was laid out for a school," end quote. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com. Atro Snyder reports for the Times Union that the first El Nino climate pattern seen in the Pacific in 4 years may mean a late frost and a winter with little snowfall and warm temperatures. The National Weather Service's Climate Prediction Center says temperatures are around 50% more likely to be above normal this fall and winter, likely because of the return of El Nino. Paul Roundy, a professor of atmospheric and environmental science at the University of Albany, said, and I quote, "So El Nino this year is not a normal El Nino event. This one is special because it came right after a very long period of La Nina," end quote. The last time El Nino was around, there were some startling statistics. Christmas Eve 2015 reached 72 degrees, and the earliest 80-degree day in the Albany area was recorded on March 9, 2016. Roundy said, and I quote, "It was the warmest winter on record, but we also had one of the coldest nights in a decade," end quote. Roundy said, "This year, the El Nino weather pattern is situated further east, which usually leads to milder winters and less snow." He said, and I quote, "This one is so far to the east and so strong at this point, it's less likely to go back to the Central Pacific," end quote. Read more about this story in the Times Union. And that wraps up the WGXC Daily News. You can visit our website at WGXC.org for local weather updates, public meetings, a community calendar, or COVID-19 updates. And while you're there, please click on the donate button to become a WGXC sustaining supporter or make a one-time donation. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a pleasant tomorrow.
From Iran to the U.S., our history of coups has come home to roost. I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! With Dennis Moynihan and our weekly Breaking the Sound Barrier podcast. August 19th marked the 70th anniversary of the overthrow of Mohammad Mossadegh, the first democratically elected prime minister of Iran. It was the first coup d'etat in the modern era orchestrated by the United States, launching decades of coups, assassinations, and regime change. While Iran's grim anniversary generated scant attention in the United States, one attempted coup was in the news as defendants in the Fulton County, Georgia election interference case against former President Donald Trump and his 18 co-conspirators began surrendering for arrest. This is the second indictment served on Trump for his attempted coup against the U.S. following his 2020 election defeat. The Trump-summoned mob that stormed the U.S. Capitol almost stopped the peaceful transfer of power. The violence on January 6, 2021, though, was just a shadow of the bloodshed that accompanied countless U.S.-sponsored interventions around the globe. President Dwight Eisenhower's administration was directly involved in Mossadegh's overthrow, but it had help. The CIA was just 6 years old in 1953. Britain's spy agency, MI6 by comparison, had been around for decades, had two world wars behind it, and had fomented uprisings and intrigue the world over as Britain struggled to maintain its waning empire. By the 1950s, the British Empire's lifeblood was petroleum, pumped from Iran's oil fields by the British-controlled Anglo-Iranian Oil Company. In 1951, tired of being plundered, the Iranian parliament nationalized its oil industry. The movement was led by Mohammad Mossadegh, who not long after was elected prime minister. He would remain in office for just over a year as the U.S. and the U.K. plotted to retake control of Iran's oil. The extent to which MI6 partnered with the CIA in Mossadegh's ouster was revealed when a remarkable documentary, Coup 53, premiered in 2019. The film, directed by Taghi Amirani, an Iranian-born physicist-turned-filmmaker, uncovered the coup's long-concealed direction by an MI6 operative named Norman Derbyshire.
We all grew up with the story of the CIA coup run by Kermit Roosevelt.
Amirani said on the Democracy Now! NewsHour, he was describing Kermit Roosevelt, recruited by CIA Director Alan Dulles and his brother, Secretary of State John Foster Dulles, to be the CIA's point person on the Iran coup. He was the grandson of President Theodore Roosevelt. Kermit Roosevelt gave numerous interviews practically bragging he brought $1 million into Iran for the coup, but only spent $60,000 of it.
Kermit didn't speak Persian. He was only in Iran for 3 weeks. He didn't know Iran at all. He was more of a bag man and an adventurist.
Amirani said, going on to describe MI6's principal Iran operative.
Derbyshire was in Iran from the age of 19 as a soldier. He spoke probably better Persian than me. He knew the Iranian street. He really understood the psyche of the Iranian mob, as he says in the interview in our film. He knows how to turn them, what buttons to press.
Amirani's research for Coup 53 uncovered troves of forgotten material. He found a transcript of an interview with Derbyshire. When the initial CIA-led coup attempt failed, a mercenary mob hired by Derbyshire swept through Tehran, surrounded Mossadegh's house, and with the help of rebellious army officers, attacked the residence and arrested Mossadegh. The U.S. and Britain installed a puppet, Mohammad Reza Pahlavi, as the Shah of Iran. He ruled for a quarter century, guided by the CIA in the creation of SAVAK, a brutal state security apparatus that terrorized and killed Iranians who dared to speak out. In 1979, the Shah was overthrown during the Iranian Revolution, ushering in strict theocratic rule that persists to this day. Amirani's research brought him to the nonprofit National Security Archives in Washington, D.C., which prize classified documents from the U.S. government for public access. One key CIA document obtained by the archive in 2013 reads, "The military coup that overthrew Mossadegh and his National Front cabinet was carried out under CIA direction as an act of U.S. foreign policy conceived and approved at the highest levels of government," unquote. In one chilling interstitial in Coup 53, document boxes that line the wall of the archive's reading room scroll by, listing successive U.S.-sponsored coups, attempted coups, and military interventions that followed the overthrow of Mossadegh. Arbenz, Guatemala, 1954. Lumumba, Congo, 1961. Trujillo, Dominican Republic, 1961. Diem, Vietnam, 1963. Gulat, Brazil, 1964. Sukarno, Indonesia, 1965. Salvador Allende, Chile, 1973. And others from the invasion of Grenada in 1983 to the wars in Nicaragua and El Salvador in the 1980s, the ongoing attempts to overthrow the governments of Cuba and Venezuela to the invasion and occupation of Iraq. Hopefully confronting a homegrown attempted coup with the multiple prosecutions of Donald Trump and his co-defendants will hasten a reckoning with our nation's violent history plotting coups abroad. On the 70th anniversary of the coup in Iran, such self-reflection is long overdue. I'm Amy Goodman with Dennis Moynihan.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Nora E. Adelman of Athens, New York. Sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You, too, can become a WGXC sustaining supporter by investing in community radio every month. Go to WGXC.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
WGXC has a new call-in number for anyone to leave a three-minute message that we will play back on the air. Listeners can leave as many three-minute audio letters to the editor at 518-212-7509 as they want, and WGXC will let your voice be heard on the local airwaves. The number again to call in and record a three-minute message that will be played back on 90.7 FM is 518-212-7509.
WGXC believes in creative use of the airwaves. WGXC is a program division of the nonprofit arts organization Wave Farm, based in Accra, New York. We are the only station in the country to dedicate significant airtime to radio as an artistic medium. Tune in to transmission art and experimental sound programming overnight and on Saturdays, and hear artists from all over the world who sculpt and compose with the airwaves.
WayFarm respectfully and humbly acknowledges the past, present, and future Indigenous peoples on whose ancestral lands WayFarm and our radio station, WGXC, operate and broadcast. The Mohicans named themselves the People of the Waters That Are Never Still, following their arrival along the Mohicanitta, the Great Ebb Tide River, also known as the Hudson. The Mohicans stewarded this land over many generations in dynamic communication and interaction with diverse Indigenous peoples, including the Haudenosaunee Mohawk and the Munsee Lenape. Mohican descendants today live in communities in Ontario, Wisconsin, and Oklahoma. For further information on Mohican history and the contemporary community of the Stockbridge Munsee Band of Mohican Indians, please visit Mohican.com.
You are tuned to 90.7 FM, WGXC, hands-on, listener-supported radio for Greene and Columbia counties.
Smile on the face. They said, we're your brothers from a faraway place. The Indians greeted them with wide open arms. Two simple-minded and trusting to see through the charms. Ex-hoodlums and jailbirds with backgrounds of crime, they had a chance to breathe freely for the very first time, to drink cool, clear water from clean mountain streams. When taken for granted, it's not what it seems. They landed at Plymouth, whoa, with a little smile on the face. They said, we're your brothers from a faraway place. I know the Indians greeted them with wide open arms. Too simple-minded, oh, to see through the charms. Slowly but surely, in came the forked tongue to trick those who trusted, humiliate the young. They said Indians are different. Whoa, they gotta stay. Smile on the face. They said, we're your brothers from a faraway place. I know the Indians greeted them wide open arms. Too simple-minded and trusting to see through the charms. In came the religions, the liquor, and the guns. They claimed to be good guys, yeah, but they acted like face. They said, we're your brothers, from a faraway place. The Indians greeted them with wide open arms. Two simple minds see through the charms, polluting the water. women with a little smile on the face. They said, we're your brothers from a faraway place. The Indians greeted them with wide open arms. Two simple-minded through the charms. Now the sun's slowly setting. Yes, and the Indians are few. They've been murdered and pillaged. My God, what they've been through. Standing on death. Said, we're your brothers from a faraway place. The Indians greeted them with wide open arms.
Wayfarm's Public Art Park begins opening Saturdays on June 3rd for drop-in visits anytime between noon and 6 p.m. The art park is on Wayfarm's 29-acre campus in Accra, featuring 13 installations. The study center, including a research library, the WGXC 90.7 FM Accra broadcast studio, and accommodations for Wayfarm's International Artist Residency Program. Visitors to Wayfarm's Art Park receive a guided tour of the campus. Admission is free, and tours typically last between 60 and 90 minutes. The Art Park is available to see on other days through October through reservations at wayfarm.org.
Next, we tune in the latest episode of the I Have Seen Niagara radio theater show from G. Lucas Crane and Rick Royer. The show airs Saturday mornings on the WGXC Morning Show between 9 and 10 a.m. and every early Wednesday night just after midnight.
Here in Niagara Falls, the stories may intersect with the intricacy of a spider's web, or they may churn and rush to fill any space with ooze and ichor, where demons and shadows may maliciously cavort, or they may instead work innocuous jobs at the marina. Our previous stories have brought us here, but here may be a place stories and tales and yarns and tellings are ripped to shreds, where they displace where they cyclically fade away into mist or emerge soft and pink from the charnel ovens. Each droplet of the balls reflects a corner of the mind. As a story may be different when you are observing it from a scenic overlook, or if it is thick and viscous and poured over your body, or if you are thrown into a barrel and set adrift over the rushing cliffs of narrative closure and suspenseful catharsis. Prologues and epilogues nipping at your arms, a sea of content rushing into your open veins. Now, we delve in between the words and sentences, to where stories cannot go, to where tone and form are leaking and cracked, where the soft belly of temporal clarity is necrotic and obsessed, where the mouth of our narrative foams and forms a great sky cataract, rushing and pouring and pooling and eddying, until only sound itself may be our house, our canyon, our looming and tumescent sky. Lost among the detritus of our details, peeled back until the pullback is back around and pulling, we turn the jewel-hardened sputum of our Niagara and let it catch our light in its facets. We shall spend a special series of moments now perversely investigating the mystical, unspeakable, and unspoken layers evident in our textures, the tales within our tales, beyond language, beyond reason, beyond the Western Door. Singular notion of the power and capabilities of magnetism was entertained thusly. It was believed that a sympathetic alphabet could be made on the flesh by means of which persons could correspond with each other and communicate all their ideas with the rapidity of volition, although thousands of miles apart. From the arms of two persons, a piece of flesh was cut and mutually transplanted while still warm and bleeding. The piece, so severed, grew into the new arm on which it was placed, but still retained so close a sympathy with its native limb that its old possessor was always sensible of any injury done to it. Upon these transplanted pieces were tattooed the letters of the alphabet, so that when a communication was to be made, either of the persons,
though the wide Atlantic might roll between them, had only to prick his arm with a magnetic needle, and straight away, his friend received intimation that the telegraph was at work. Whatever letter he pricked upon his own arm pained the same letter on the arm of his correspondent.
Forward, Caso's child, Hawk reads a book, Bugle Angel, engage with the inner material, color in, yet another sheet of scribbling, clear, peacock, body, small box, both hands, dying neck, or cod, throat, play the bugle, sea lion, violin player, bamboo strip, mournful face of the rotten boy, kissing the spider web's chair, hold a spherical object, woman of the flame, point at the skull, kissing the angel, put on fangs, and come forward, the neck skin, insert buttock stick, chin with beard, goes chick bird, bulge, blow. Rhinoceros ribbon on a pig. Understanding of the bugle player's feathers and a comical movement. A thickened kind of space. Do not move. Just engage. Flying shadow. Back. Bugle angel. Relax the shoulders. Order of sea lion. Blackout.
Even a dead Roman horseman would negotiate with more skill than you.
What are you going to do?
Come here.
All right.
Sure you want. Come
on. Feel that foot.
Remedial work continued with all deliberate speed through the fall of 1978. In an attempt to complete the trenching, drainage tiling, and plague capping of the southern end before the spring thaw of 1979. Remedial work continued from dawn to dusk, rain, snow, or shine, throughout the fall and winter of 1978 to 1979. The containment plan called for capping the entire site with thousands of tons of clay, and dump trucks began to bring it into the site in a continuous caravan day after day for weeks. The clay capping was gradually built up on the southern section of the canal. Eventually, it would be extended over the remedial containment trenching and the entire dump site, and then tapered and seeded it so as to appear as a site wall. Eventually, the clay capping on the southern section of the site was as high as the eaves of the abandoned homes in 1997 and 99th Street.
Has a strong effect.
For some reason or another, you sound a little taller on radio.
While you was gone, you must have done a lot of favor. You got a whole lot of things I don't think that you could ever have paid for. While you've been busy crying about my past mistakes, I've been busy trying to make a change. And now I made a change.
Someone I've known for a number of years here in Hudson, Stella Yoon, who has recently become the executive director, or the ED.
The ED, yeah.
Did you hear that?
Yeah.
of CREATE. And you have with you someone, can you tell us who that is?
Yep, I have Michelle Saunders. She is a longtime Catskill enthusiast, culture enthusiast, and our partner in organizing our upcoming fundraiser that's happening this weekend.
Ah, I see. And as part of that fundraiser, they're having light green hair?
That's just Michelle.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I thought it might
radiating
be special. Radiating
goodness.
Goodness.
Yeah,
cool.
Yeah.
So let's begin with some basics. What is CREATE?
CREATE Council on the Arts is the art council for Green, Columbia, and Schoharie counties. And primarily serving artists and art organizations with grant funding opportunities, resources, and support and community. So,
does it have a physical space?
It does.
And where's that?
398 Main Street in Catskill.
That's in Catskill.
Yeah.
So, and you give out grants, or you?
We do. We get money from the state art council that. There's an application process that people can apply for. And so essentially we re-grant money from the state as well as the counties. Actually, there are some upcoming Columbia County opportunities. We'll announce that before the end of the year.
What do you mean? You mean grants that you're going to get in Columbia County?
Yeah.
And what's your annual grant budget like?
From the state, I think this past cycle it was around $180,000 across the three counties.
Yeah.
For Columbia County right now, there's about $9,000.
Wait, out of 180, we only get nine?
No. Separately. Okay, so there's state money.
Right.
And then Columbia County.
Oh, contribute.
From the county. There's,
that's typically cheap of Columbia County. Yeah, they like to sit on money.
So in terms of if someone applies for the grant, how much money can they get?
Right now, so the NISCA, the New York State Council on the Arts, they can get up to $5,000 for a project. Individual artists can get up to $2,500.
Wow. And that was John asking that question. He's trying to learn how to ask questions. So forgive him if they don't really penetrate well. You know, he's new at this. Sorry,
you're
John.
Doing great.
So now, my understanding is that CREATE was kind of like on the downslide for a while. Is that true? Or it was having problems?
I think the pandemic was really hard. There's been a lot of transitioning. So CREATE originally was founded as the Greene County Council on the Arts in the 70s. Mm-hmm. And I know that Columbia County had an art council. I remember there was one at the time that I first moved here 12 years ago. That is no longer around over the last few years.
Did they have a little building up in North County somewhere? I recall.
Actually, on Warren Street, it used to be.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Okay. and they used to do an art walk in October, but that was many, many years ago.
Yeah.
So CREATE, in the last couple of years, rebranded and
rebranding.
Officially...
John, that's a key term, rebranding. That's when things aren't looking good and you decide to reinvent yourself.
Well, it's renamed...
Twitter to X.
Yeah. Oh, gosh.
Twitter
to Don't get me started. Yeah. But yeah, so in the last couple of years, it's become the art council for the three counties, hence, I guess, a necessity to rebrand and, you know. It's
that makes sense to me.
Yeah.
So, Stella, tell us a little about yourself. I know some stuff about you, but what do you bring to this new job? How long have you been in the position?
Since June.
Oh, okay.
So, very new position. I guess, most recently I founded and ran Hudson River Exchange,
mm-hmm.
Which still does technically exist, but I think through the pandemic and just shifts in priority in life, not as much right now as a focus.
So you had a commercial space, so to speak, on Warren Street, and then you had events at the waterfront,
yep.
I recall.
Yeah, so we were doing markets for makers and, you know, local handmade businesses, and on Warren Street, essentially it became this retail incubator.
Mm-hmm.
We were showcasing different makers from the
mm-hmm.
area on a rotating basis. We had some studio spaces in the back that people were renting and selling out of.
At the Warren Street.
Well, yeah, a lot going on back there.
Yeah.
And so, there was, we've had a number of people come through who have opened their own retail spaces since working with us. A few that I can name on Warren Street are Inky.
Mm-hmm.
She's at the top of the park. And then
Bolar.
Yes, Bolar. Okay. And then actually Artemisia, the clothing store, a couple doors down from our former space.
Mm-hmm.
On
the corner of Fifth and Warren.
That's right.
The northeast corner.
Yep. And Fahari, who has a shop in Chatham, was kind of testing out
fellow
Hudson
CrossFitter,
through our
by the way. Unfortunately, Sheila's not here to make fun of that comment, but Fahari is a CrossFitter, fellow CrossFitter, believe it or not.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I believe it. She's a badass.
She totally is.
Yeah.
Anyway, all right, her shop is in Chatham.
Yeah. So I guess just very briefly, I am a creative. I went to art school, and actually coming out of art school, I was kind of thinking about going to grad school for art administration and curating, took a different turn, got into kind of the commercial art retail world, worked in visual merchandising and got into prop styling, working in the photography world and all sorts of different kind of creative jobs in New York City. And then I moved up here, founded Hudson River Exchange with a few folks. And this job is kind of actually a little full circle moment for me because, you know, as a young person, I thought that I would be an arts administrator.
And that's what you're going to be doing.
That is essentially what I'm doing now.
So you have a significant budget to dole out as grants throughout, did you say, the three counties?
Mm-hmm.
Schoharie, Columbia, and Greene.
Mm-hmm.
Equally? Or is it based on population or whatever?
Yeah, it's based on...
So given your background, will this be like, will there be crafty type people as well as, you know, people who aren't, you know, so focused on the marketplace? In other words, a painter doesn't necessarily, is a lot different than a potter who's trying to sell their ceramics, you know, for...
I mean, yes and no. Yes and no. I mean, everyone, you know, is essentially trying to find a market and an audience for their work and... Those marketplaces are and audiences may be different, but I think fundamentally it's the same or a lot of same principles. You're essentially running a small business as an artist or a maker. I think there's a deep relationship between, you know, to me, in a way, it's all kind of the same. Creatives are it's a big umbrella. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, through Hudson River Exchange, it was a business really run mission-centered, and some people thought it was a nonprofit because of that. Mm-hmm. I think community building is something that I'm personally really interested in and essentially got to do through that project, and I'm really excited to have a platform like an Arts Council that its role is to essentially build creative community, and there's infrastructure there that mm-hmm. exists, support from local to state government and additional resources that we can tap into. And I think being where we are between these counties, there's so much opportunity to collaborate with the small businesses for economic development, because we all know, you know, the arts really inspire, you know, cool places to live and mm-hmm. People doing interesting things. So I think for me, I get to do the things that I'm excited to do, which is connecting with creatives, building a community, and celebrating, you know,
when you talk
all the
about
talent.
Building community, are some of the potentially fundable projects sort of educational in the sense that you could bring in kids and things like that?
Yeah, there are different categories, and, you know, there's additional information on the website, and actually our next grant cycle is going to open up in January. So there's community projects, arts education projects, then you know, individual artist projects.
Got
but you know, compelling applications, there's like a strong tie to how it's serving the community or speaking to community needs.
So the application process is, do you have a panel? That
there are panels.
They change.
There are people from each county that review, so the panels are county specific.
Mm-hmm.
And are they what's the word I want to use? Category specific? So, you know, theater versus
performing arts
versus visual art. Right.
You know, the panelists can be anybody within any stakeholder or a resident within a county. I think it's interesting because it's serving the community, and the community is not necessarily all artists. So I think it's helpful to have people who are interested in supporting these types of projects or interested in getting involved. I think that's the most important thing and the biggest qualifier. But yeah.
We're talking to Ella Yoon, the new executive director of CREATE.
Station on the ground reporting. News, odds, and hopping. Yay! Here I am, your main man, reporting from Jam Jam. On 16,000 kilocycles FM and 1,000 megahertz on the ground. Yeah! Yeah, from a series of flashing, a I give you another rapid.
If he goes back to the house, then things would go from bad to worse. What could he do? He wants to remember things exactly as he left them on that funny day.